Ready. Sorry.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you all to this public session of the Defense Business Board's task group that's reviewing the National Security Personnel System. This task group is a subcommittee of the Defense Business Board, which is a federal advisory committee to the Department of Defense. This afternoon's session is specifically designed for the task group to receive remarks from six invited guests. We welcome you all to hear and listen to how this exchange will go today. We ask you to refrain from comments and to allow our task group to hear the conversation that they're all here to receive. And again, thank you for joining us. The last thing I wanted to mention is that copies of the material that will be presented in today's session will be made available later this afternoon or first thing in the morning there with us on the internet on the Defense Business Board's website.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, and welcome to everyone. Today, the task group meeting concerns the National Security Personnel System. Today, the Department of Defense employs more than 700,000 civilians. These career civilians play an essential role in meeting the national security mission of the Department of Defense to provide for the common defense. With military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan and other demanding deployments on U.S. military personnel, the department's mission has become more complex. The role of DoD civilian workforce now includes more significant participation in combat support and readiness functions that allow military personnel to focus on warfighting duties. The men and women who support our national security, active duty, reserve, National Guard, and career civilians serve with determination, professionalism, and reflect great credit on the country they serve. Every American is grateful for their service. At this critical time, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has included in the Department's fiscal 2010 budget request authority to hire an additional 13,000 new civilian personnel this coming year, and up to 30,000 additional civil servants over the next 5 years. In 2003, the Congress enacted the National Security Personnel System. The aim of NSPS was to establish a more flexible, mission-based personnel management system that is linked to DoD goals. The 2003 legislation included a series of provisions on labor management that were reversed by Congress in 2008, but nevertheless served to greatly damage the strong sense of partnership and commitment that had been established between labor and management during earlier administrations. NSPS has now been deployed in spirals, and for the earliest of these spirals, three rounds of payout have now been made under NSPS. Reactions have been vigorous. Supporters of the new system extol the flexibility, the performance-based criteria, and the effect of the system on overall performance. Critics have argued that the system lacks transparency, fairness, and oversight. In all cases, the opinions have been very strong, rooted in personal perspective and experience, and offered with sincerity and conviction. Following a number of concerns raised by Congress and the U.S. Government Accountability Office, in March 2009, the Deputy Secretary of Defense placed a moratorium on NSPS conversions and created a task group of the Defense Business Board to review NSPS. This group, which includes my colleagues, Mr. Michael Bayer and Mr. Robert Tobias, has been tasked to answer a number of questions about NSPS, its design and implementation, and to make recommendations to the Department of Defense on the policy going forward. Among the many questions we are looking into, we have three for specific focus. First, do the underlying design principles and methodology for implementation reflect the program objectives? Second, are the program objectives being met? And third, is NSPS operating in a fair, transparent, and effective manner? Today, we are here to meet with experts who will share their views on NSPS. Many of these experts have spoken previously before Congress and have agreed to appear again today to present their positions and to answer questions for the panel. The presenters include Mr. Brad Bunn, the Program Executive Officer for NSPS, Brenda Farrell of the Government Accountability Office, Mr. John Crum of the Merit Systems Protection Board, Mr. John Gage, the President of the American Federation of Government Employees. Welcome, President Gage. Richard Brown of the National Federation of Federal Employees. Welcome. And Mr. Darrell Perkinson of the Federal Managers Association. Tomorrow, the task group will convene an additional session with those interested in presenting public comment. The session will hear from invited speakers drawn from comments and information we received since announcing this effort. As of Monday, the task group has received more than 550 comments from supervisors, organizations, members of the workforce, and others with exceptional and insightful comments. Most were from individuals with experience in the NSPS system, and we selected speakers for tomorrow who could speak from that experience. The comments raised a wide range of issues to be considered, and we appreciate the energy and thoughtfulness of all of those comments. That session tomorrow convenes at 9 a.m. These public sessions are the third round in a series of meetings we have convened to research and investigate NSPS. The task force has conducted two interview sessions with representatives and stakeholders in NSPS. On June 12th, we met with the representatives of the 36 member unions of the United DoD Works Coalition. We discussed a variety of issues, including the performance management system, reassignments and promotions, pay pools, and issues of equity. On June the 19th, the task group met with key Department of Defense stakeholders, including representatives from three branches of the military, the intelligence community, and the Office of the Secretary of Defense. We solicited their views on the system, its effects on performance and productivity, and the benefits and problems with NSPS. I would like to thank those who attended the interviews for their participation and candid remarks. The meetings helped us better understand the views on NSPS, which will be very important as we continue the review. We'd also like to express our appreciation for all of those who have given comments and come forward to get all the facts on the table, even when those facts are critical of the current policy. The task group will make a presentation with preliminary recommendations to the Defense Business Board on July 16, 2009, and that will be a public session of the Defense Business Board. So, before we receive comments from our first panel of experts, let me yield to my two colleagues for any comments they would like to make. Mr. Tobias.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to be here to listen to what our witnesses have to say about this NSPS system. I think the issue that we're considering is complex, it's difficult, and I'm looking forward to hearing what these folks have to say to us this afternoon. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And it is also a great honor to be here and to be able to hear the comments of the distinguished witnesses that are going to be before the panel. It is also, I think, enormously satisfying to see so many other people who care enough to be here to hear this and participate in this process. As the chairman said, we've had some extraordinary submissions to the panel. I think we've all read them very carefully, and we understand the gravity of the situation, and we really are looking forward to what this session today and tomorrow and those to come. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll let the panel proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Baer, Mr. Tobias. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about the National Security Personnel System at the Department of Defense. NSPS remains a critical area of focus for the department. As of today, we have over 200,000 civilian employees and hundreds of DoD organizations under the system. As the Program Executive Officer for NSPS, my office is responsible for the design, implementation, and evaluation of the system. I report to the Deputy Secretary of Defense, who, in partnership with the Director of the Office of Personnel Management, Honorable John Barry, chartered the program review in which you're engaged. Secretary Lynn has stated on several occasions that the department is committed to operating fair, transparent, and effective personnel systems for our DoD civilians, and the results of the board's review will inform and assist the department's leadership together with the director of OPM and Congress in determining the future of NSPS. My role here today is to provide you information on the implementation of NSPS and share what we've found so far in our assessment of the program. And I hope my participation will enhance the task group's understanding of the system as you develop your findings and recommendations. I've submitted a written statement for the record, so I'll use this opportunity to briefly summarize those remarks and talk focused on the paper performance system and our own internal evaluation. Before I go into those things, I think it's important for the board to understand that the statute authorizing NSPS requires the system to have, quote, a pay-for-performance evaluation system to better link individual pay to performance and provide an equitable method for appraising and compensating employees. This requirement forms one of the underlying design principles of the system, which is that employee performance must be taken into greater account in making pay decisions. In contrast to the general schedule system, in which most pay increases are automatic and based on the passage of time, the design of NSPS gives performance a much larger role in the compensation process. Again, the system was designed to promote a performance culture in which performance expectations are aligned to the mission and the organizational goals, and the performance and contributions of civilians are better recognized and rewarded. Importantly, the law also requires a fair, credible, and transparent performance appraisal system with adequate safeguards in place to ensure fairness and equity. This requirement recognizes that under pay for performance, the stakes of the appraisal process are higher, and checks and balances are needed to ensure fairness. To that end, we designed the NSPS performance management system to be a rigorous and robust process for appraising and evaluating employee performance based on standard performance benchmarks with a variety of safeguards in place to ensure fairness and equity. In addition to uniform performance measurement criteria across NSPS, there are multiple level reviews of recommended ratings, share assignments, and payout distribution determinations. The pay pool panels also review and reconcile performance ratings to ensure consistency across the organization in the application of that criteria. NSPS regulations prohibit the practice of forced distribution, and pay pool panel results are subject to final review and approval by senior leadership. Employees also have the right to challenge their performance rating through a formal reconsideration process. In the past performance appraisal year, of the roughly 170,000 employees rated, approximately 4,200 filed a reconsideration request, and of those, about a third were granted in favor of the employee. Employees also continue to have the right to file a complaint if they believe they were subject to illegal discrimination. In terms of implementation, before organizations converted to NSPS, there was a comprehensive and extensive initiative to train senior leaders, managers, supervisors, and employees on the core NSPS elements with a particular and purposeful focus on the performance management process. One of the mission areas of the Program Executive Office is to evaluate NSPS regulations and their implementation to ensure we examine how NSPS is working compared to the key performance parameters. Before I turn to what we're finding, I'd like to make the point that NSPS evaluation is a continuous process. We gather and reflect on information throughout the year about how the system is operating and how those involved perceive it. We learn and act continuously along with the defense components in the department so the department can make timely changes to the system and support tools and share good practices. That said, we're cautious about drawing conclusions about the system as a whole from early and limited data. As you've heard repeatedly from different sources, it commonly takes years for employees to adapt to major human capital system changes. We're also mindful that 200,000 employees converted to NSPS at different times between 2006 and 2009. We therefore look at an array of indicators. We look for trends and corroborating information from multiple sources, like factual observations as well as opinions. In 2008, after the first full year in NSPS for most of the Spiral 1 workforce, we had enough runtime and enough information from varied sources for our first comprehensive evaluation, which we've provided to the board and to the task group and recently released on our website. What does the 2008 evaluation tell us? Well, it tells us that the indicators are mixed. In interviews, managers and senior officials point to increased attention to performance, with some noting that performance ratings often were not completed under previous systems. They value the translation of organizational priorities into individual objectives, so employees better see where their work fits into the entire organization. Many acknowledge long-standing difficulty and weak skills in addressing employees with performance problems, but they felt that NSPS was helpful because of the standard NSPS rating criteria, disciplined appraisal process, and pay consequences. All are conscious of the additional supervisory and managerial time being spent on performance management, especially in the fall when we hold our pay pools, And some accept that as intrinsic to their leadership role, while others fault NSPS, particularly those with a heavy personal workload or many subordinates. Managers and supervisors in competitive labor markets say that pay banding and the compensation system help them fill jobs by offering more competitive salaries than they could under the GS. For jobs that were easy to fill under the GS, they generally don't see NSPS as an advantage. In interviews, employees and supervisors acknowledge that there is more communication about performance and the organization's priorities. Most are uncomfortable with Level 3 ratings and criteria under NSPS, however. They tend to believe that those who do their work well should get high ratings. The fact that high ratings are not all that common leads many to question the reliance on written assessments and on pay pool panels with management officials who aren't their immediate supervisors. The lag time between the end of the rating cycle and feedback on rating and payout results is also of great concern to employees and raters. Many raters avoid talking to employees about their performance at the end of the appraisal period because they're waiting to hear from the pay pool manager about the final rating. Finally, feedback to the workforce on overall pay pool results varied to such a degree last year that we decided to add requirements in the NSPS regulations and implementing issuances based on good practices at some organizations. The status of forces surveys for DoD civilians gives us a somewhat different take on how the workforce perceives NSPS. From the 2008 survey, we see 70% of NSPS employees answered positively that their performance standards are directly linked to their organization's mission, compared to 65% of the non-NSPS workforce. When asked if they believe pay raises depend on how well employees perform their jobs, 42% of NSPS employees responded positively, compared to 25% of the non-NSPS workforce. 60% of NSPS employees agreed that performance drives bonuses and cash awards, compared to 55% of the non-NSPS workforce. NSPS employees overall are generally more satisfied with their pay and the management in their organizations than their non-NSPS counterparts. Even with only 38% positive responses from NSPS employees that differences in performance are recognized in a meaningful way, they're still about 4 points higher than the rest of the workforce. And according to the 2008 survey, NSPS employees are less likely than non-NSPS employees to leave DoD for another job. Looking at trends, the NSPS workforce tracks closely, often somewhat better, with the overall DoD workforce on their work, their sense of accomplishment, co-worker cooperation, respect for senior leaders, confidence in their supervisors, and whether steps are taken to deal with poor performers. For many questions where we saw declines in the first 6 months or first year, opinions leveled off for most groups with the 2008 survey. We await the results of the 2009 survey to see if these results hold up. While these results are encouraging, we're also seeing responses that are cause for concern. NSPS employees were not as positive as others in the 2008 survey that their performance appraisal was a fair reflection of their performance. Positive responses were at 65% for the overall workforce and at 61% for the NSPS workforce. We note, however, that Spiral 1.1 employees drop on this question the first year, flattened the second year. We see a similar pattern when we ask if the employee understood what he or she had to do to be rated at a particular level. 59% of the NSPS employees agreed, compared to 65% of those outside of NSPS. About 33% of Spiral 1 NSPS supervisors agreed that pay for performance as implemented at their organization fairly reflected their ratee's performance, and approximately one quarter were neutral. Only 26% of the NSPS workforce agreed in 2008 that the pay pool panel helps ensure that the rating and payout process is equitable in their organization, and 36% disagreed. These opinions, coupled with other feedback from the workforce, reinforce that there remains a great deal of work to do to improve the quality of performance plans and stated expectations, understanding of the standard NSPS performance rating criteria, and transparency of pay pool panel deliberation processes and practices. Our reviews of pay pool results show that organizations are making meaningful distinctions in performance, and while the average rating is a 3 in most pay pools and across NSPS, all the other rating levels are being used. Some supervisory officials acknowledge they are reluctant to recommend ratings below level 3, but we do see significantly more ratings at levels 1 and 2 under NSPS than under traditional rating systems. Among the goals of the system is to encourage employees to improve performance from year to year. For employees who received a rating in both 2008 and 2009, the great majority who received a 1 or a 2 rating in 2008 got a higher rating, mostly 3s, some even higher in 2009. Finally, as recently reported in the Federal Times, we see differences in ratings among certain demographic groups that require further examination to see if any factors besides performance may be involved. Another concern often expressed by NSPS organizations is the challenge associated with operating multiple personnel systems. Our implementation strategy has resulted in some organizations managing a combination GS-NSPS workforce, which can lead to administrative difficulties and equity issues. In summary, I return to my point that the indicators for NSPS are mixed. There is evidence the system is beginning to fulfill the objective of a strong performance culture that recognizes and rewards performance and contribution. Evidence also points to positive movement towards a more agile and responsive workforce within the limitations of a mixed workforce. Training has been a positive attribute of NSPS. The NSPS workforce has generally been complementary of the training and now seeks more hands-on learning experiences. We have a ways to go, however, to ensure the system is credible to and trusted by the workforce. Some of that will depend on continuous operational improvements and on employees and raters gaining experience with setting performance expectations, assessing performance, and application of the standard rating criteria. Finally, and probably most importantly, continuous leadership communication and engagement and employee engagement are crucial to the success of any pay-for-performance system, including NSPS. The department is committed to an open, ongoing process of communication and consultation about NSPS with Congress, our employees and their representatives, key stakeholders, and the Defense Business Board Task Group. So I thank you for providing me this opportunity to share the department's experiences with NSPS, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much for your statement. Ms. Perrell for the Government Accountability Office.
I'm not sure if I knew that myself. I do have a loud voice, so let me summarize what I've submitted for the record.
Certainly.
Mr. De Leon and members of the task group, thank you for the opportunity to be here today to discuss the first of GAO's three congressionally directed reports on the implementation of DOD's new performance management system for its civilian personnel workforce, the National Security Personnel System. Key components of NSPS include compensation, classification, and performance management. Our review focused on the performance management aspect of NSPS, specifically, one, the extent to which DOD has implemented internal safeguards to ensure the fairness, effectiveness, and credibility of the new system, and two, how DOD civilian personnel perceive NSPS and what actions DOD has taken to address these perceptions. But first, let me note some background on human capital management. In recent years, strategic human capital management has received increased attention across the federal government, including DOD. Our work has found that today's federal human capital strategies are not appropriately constituted to meet current and emerging challenges or drive needed transformation across the federal government. One of the key areas that federal agencies continue to face challenges in is creating results-oriented organizational cultures. Agencies have lacked organizational cultures that promote high performance and accountability and empower and include employees in setting and accomplishing programmatic goals, which are critical to successful organizations. To transform their cultures, high-performing organizations have recognized that effective performance managed system can be a strategic tool to drive internal change and achieve desired results. While GAO supports human capital reform in the federal government, how such reform is done, when it is done, and the basis upon which it is done can make all the difference in whether such efforts are successful. Specifically, we have noted that federal agencies must ensure that performance management systems contain appropriate internal safeguards, such as assuring reasonable transparency in connection with the results of the performance management process. We developed an initial list of safeguards based on our extensive body of work reviewing performance management practices used by leading public sector organizations. In 2008, Congress directed GAO to evaluate annually for 3 years the extent to which DOD implemented internal safeguards, NSPS, as specified in the congressional mandate, and employee perceptions. My statement today addresses these two topics and is based primarily on the work we reported in September 2008. First, I will discuss the steps DOD has taken to implement internal safeguards in NSPS. DOD has taken some steps to implement internal safeguards to help ensure that the new system is fair, effective, and credible. However, we believe continued monitoring of safeguards is needed to help ensure that DOD's actions are effective as implementation proceeds. For our 2008 report, we determined that DOD could immediately improve its implementation of three safeguards. For example, we found that DOD's implementation of NSPS does not provide employees with adequate transparency over their rating results because it does not require commands or pay pools to publish their respective ratings and share distributions to employees. Without transparency over ratings and share distributions, employees may believe they are not being rated fairly, which ultimately can undermine their confidence in the system. To address this finding, we recommended that DOD require overall final rating results to be published. DOD concurred with this recommendation in 2008, revised its NSPS regulations and guidance to require commands to publish the final overall rating results. Second, although DOD's employees under NSPS responded positively regarding some aspects of performance management, at the time of our review, DOD did not have an action plan to address the generally negative perceptions of NSPS. According to DOD's surveys of civilian employees, employees under NSPS are more positive than their colleagues who remain under the GS system about some aspects of performance management, such as connecting pay to performance and receiving feedback. However, in some instances, employees who had the most experience under NSPS showed a negative movement in their perceptions. For example, the percent of NSPS employees who believe that NSPS will have a positive effect on DOD's personnel practices declined from an estimated 40% in May 2006 to 23% in May 2007. Our ongoing congressionally mandated work is reviewing DOD's latest survey results. Some negative perceptions also emerged during discussion groups that GAO held. For example, employees and supervisors were concerned about the excessive amount of time required to navigate the process. While it is reasonable for DOD to allow employees some time to accept NSPS, not addressing persistent negative employee perceptions could jeopardize employee acceptance and successful implementation of NSPS. As a result, GAO recommended DOD develop and implement an action plan to address employee concerns. DOD partially concerned with GAO's recommendation, and just yesterday, DOD provided us with a memorandum for addressing key NSPS workforce concerns. We will assess this latest step as part of our ongoing work. In summary, NSPS represents a huge undertaking for DOD, given its massive size and geographically diverse workforce. DOD's implementation of a more performance and results-based personnel system has positioned the department at the forefront of a significant transition facing the federal government. DOD faces many challenges in implementing NSPS, as any organization would in implementing a large-scale organizational change. NSPS is a new program, and organizational change requires time for employees to accept. Moving forward, we believe continued monitoring of internal safeguards is needed to help ensure that DOD's actions are effective as implementation proceeds. That concludes my remarks. I'll be happy to take questions when you're ready.
Thank you very much. Dr. Crum.
Good afternoon, Mr. DeLeon, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Tobias. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss today some of the research conducted by the Merit Systems Protection Board. As I'm sure you are aware, one of the missions of the MSPB is to conduct independent studies of the federal civil service systems to determine if the workforce is managed according to the merit principles and free from prohibitive personnel practices. In that capacity, we have identified a set of key challenges the government faces in terms of recruiting and selecting the next generation of federal employees and implementing pay-for-performance compensation systems. In recent reports, we have offered to the President and Congress recommendations regarding both federal hiring and pay systems. I should start off by mentioning that we have not, however, formally evaluated the NSPS system. The remarks I will be making will be about both hiring and pay performance systems in general. Nevertheless, although we have not specifically evaluated the National Security Personnel System, our findings do relate to the issues being raised concerning it. In terms of hiring, our studies have shown that there are several key barriers that often prevent qualified applicants from seeking employment with the federal government. These include the length of the hiring process, the complexity of the process, the use of ineffective candidate assessment tools, the absence of an effective marketing strategy, the lack of human resources and supervisory expertise and training in this area, and the fragmented hiring approach used by different federal agencies. In our reports, we have offered several recommendations to guide reform and improve federal hiring process. We believe these recommendations will be relevant to improvements that NSPS is seeking in its hiring processes. They include managing hiring as a critical business process and not an administrative function that is relegated solely to the human resources staff, evaluating internal hiring process to identify barriers, employing rigorous strategies that emphasize quality selection, implementing sound marketing practices, and preparing HR staffs and selecting officials to carry out the full range of services necessary to implement an effective recruiting strategy. And it's important to note that agencies can take all of these steps without having to change existing rules and regulations. Implementing these recommendations should help agencies ensure that they are hiring qualified employees in a timely manner from all segments of society via fair and open competition as prescribed by the Merit System Principles. Now, the merit principles also include the expectations that federal employees should be paid according to the value of the work they perform, and in particular, that excellent performance should be appropriately awarded. Although the general schedule was set up initially to also include, in fact, be a pay performance systems, the mechanisms built into it to support pay performance have often been underutilized by supervisors and managers. We then set out to look at pay performance in both the private and the federal sector to basically come up with ways to, in fact, decide how best to implement those types of systems. And doing so, we tried to come up with, well, what should be the goals of a pay performance system and what are they successful in doing in both the private and federal sector. Our conclusions were that, in the first place, pay performance is probably a better way to implement the idea of equal pay for work of equal value. The idea that it is fair to pay employees because of how well they do the job rather than how long they've been in their job. It has also been, we found, to be a more potentially more credible way to determine pay. This is an issue that will continue to be of concern in the future as the government competes for people in the private sector who will be needed for those private sector jobs. Pay performance has also been determined to help agencies successfully in terms of both recruitment and the retention of high performers. Again, pay performance can also set the stage for a number of other behaviors which are useful to the organization, and in particular, aligning employee efforts with organizational missions. As the goals of the organization are identified and then cascade down through organizations to employees in the implementation of these systems, employees can get a better idea of what they really need to contribute to the organization in order to be successful. Having said that, it is very much worth noting that there is little evidence that pay performance on its own improves organizational performance. Now, why would that be the case? I think it results in a misunderstanding of what really motivates employees to do a good job. Our research suggests that rather than working for money, employees work for a number of other things. This includes personal pride or satisfaction in their work, desire to help the organizational units achieve its goals, their duty as a public employee, and a desire not to let their coworkers down. And any sort of pay performance system that we've seen in the government, part of the issue is that relatively little money can be devoted to discriminate between high and low performers. Relatively little money is at stake. It's what, for this reason, that part of the motivational value may not be there. Rather, the value in the pay performance system is one in reinforcing the positive actions that people do, the positive behaviors and the work they perform. The idea is we're telling these people that they are truly valued. The two-edged sword of paper performance is at the same time we may be sending the message to some people they are valued, we may be sending the message to other people unintentionally that they are not so valued. This may be when they compare the amount of money they receive to what they would have received under other systems, or when they compare the rating they received to one they previously had received. This is particularly the case because our research suggests that performance appraisals are not, or performance reviews are not distributed in a normal fashion in organizations, nor should they expect it to be. So that if we, in fact, have performance appraisals, then might be skewed to reflect a more normal distribution, we're likely setting up a situation where there will be people who will consider themselves losers in that system. To the extent this occurs, they will may interpret this message as one of being less valued by the organization. If they are indeed less valued, this may not result in increased motivation, may in fact result in increased demotivation. So the difficulty, again, is sending the right message to the employees. The relationship of pay performance to performance is, again, complex in a variety of other ways. While it can, in fact, improve the retention and ability to attract employees, and it can also emphasize the supervisory behaviors and help align employee efforts to mission, this requires the performance of certain supervisory tasks in order to achieve this, tasks that supervisors may not be prepared to perform. And I'll discuss those in a moment. And in terms of the issues of fairness of pay performance systems in general, when we surveyed federal employees, we found that the overwhelming number of them were in favor of pay performance as opposed to being paid for tenure or longevity. In fact, over 2-to-1 ratio in that. Nevertheless, they were skeptical of their ability of their supervisors to, in fact, operate these systems fairly. When we asked if they and supervisor would be expected to they were expected to trust their supervisors to set pay fairly, only about a quarter agreed, about a third were neutral, and 40% felt to little or no extent would they expect their supervisors to do this. When asked whether they felt they would be treated fairly under pay performance systems, the results were such that about a third agreed, a third were neutral, and a third disagreed. In order to set up a successful pay performance system, we found that a number of conditions have to be in place. These include leadership commitment not only at the outset of the process, but throughout its development and implementation. This rests critically upon open communication. Open communication that includes employees both in the development of systems and in terms of their discussion about what is happening to them and why it is happening. In particular, there needed to be transparent systems both in terms of the ratings and in the awards determinations. Ultimately, the success of systems rests on the trust between supervisors and employees. As I've just mentioned, at the outset, that trust may be lacking in some ways. Nevertheless, results have shown that trust can be developed if, in fact, the systems are, in fact, developed well. In particular, what the good development of a successful pay performance system rests upon are the supervisors' roles in that system. Supervisors need to treat employees fairly at all levels. This includes not only in terms of performance appraisal ratings, but in terms of things such as assigning work. If employees do not feel they are given the opportunity to show what they do best, they will be unlikely to believe that the system is working well. Supervisors also need to provide continuous, accurate, and meaningful performance feedback. This includes not just feedback about their performance, but coaching, mentoring, and, in fact, empowering employees to, in fact, want to do their best. Ultimately, supervisors must also be willing and able to deal with poor performers in order to improve organizational performance. Successful pay performance systems also rest upon the development of good performance appraisal systems. Now, these are performance measures that have been designed carefully that capture the most critical elements. But it must be recognized that performance evaluation will always involve a subjective component. Whether that be the quality of the work done as opposed to the amount, the complexity of the work, or the conditions under which it is done, there will always be a subjective component. Moreover, there will always be mistakes made. It is, in fact, in how we deal with those mistakes and the concern about that subjectivity that underpin the successful systems. Successful systems, in other words, have to have adequate checks and balances in place that involve both continuous evaluation of what's going on as well as looking at the accomplishment of objectives, the impact on employee attitudes, their performance, and in fact, engage employees at every level in that system on that continuous basis. Ultimately, in conclusion on pay performance, we'd say that pay performance offers the opportunity to be a better alternative for paying than tenure, but it is not a panacea. And there, in fact, are many challenges to make it work. And it is an ongoing, continuous effort to build that employee trust with supervisors that will ultimately determine whether the systems are successful or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments, Dr. Crum, and for the other panelists. My thought, just in terms of my colleagues, it's approximately 1:40, and I would like to begin the second panel no later than 2:30. So that gives us a good amount of time here for discussion. What I'd suggest we do one round, and then in a second round, we each individually take more time. Just in terms of Brad Bunn, I think the report you were referencing is this report that is now on the web?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is a report.
Just for those that can't see it.
I'm going to read the title of it. It's the Program Executive Office National Security Personnel System 2008 Evaluation Report, date of May 15th, 2009. It's a very good document. We've all got our tabs on it. We've been through it because it's data-driven, and it does paint a very much balanced picture of NSPS in terms of criticisms, management objectives, things like that. So I would just want to note that that is now available and on the record.
Yes.
And it's at the DOD website if they go to NSPS.
If you Google NSPS, you'll find it.
Okay.
It's on the NSPS website.
All right, May 15th, 2009. But it's a good report. Let me just do one quick round of questions and then yield to my colleagues, and then we'll come back. In some of our interviewing and our research, I'd say, you know, as Dr. Crum noted, trust between supervisor and employees is critical. It's at the core of moving forward, because if you're not partners, you'll be very limited in terms of what you can accomplish. So that trust issue is in the report. It comes up in the conversation. So very clearly, issues between supervisors, employees, and how well the evaluation process works. I think that's one critical area I want to flag and then come to question on. Second, the lack of transparency on the pay pools. I'm going to ask each of you to offer me your own definition of how the pay pool is established and awarded. I would say I've been through it multiple times, and it is an extremely complicated formula to grasp in terms of how the pay pool process works. And in fact, in some of the written comments, received one letter from an employee who had very good reviews in terms of the NSP evaluation process, and yet even with a rating of 4 out of a possible 5, and with a notation that only 2% of the organization was rated higher than this individual, they still received less than the general pay increase authorized by Congress and implemented by executive order. So, one, that relationship between supervisor and employee. Two, your definition on the pay pool process and how it works and what are the anomalies there. And then three, on the structure of the pay bands, what changes would you recommend in terms of the current pay band structure? Let the table decide.
I've got the microphone in front of me, so I can start. First, on supervisor-employee relationship, clearly no doubt whatsoever that that is an extremely important component of the performance management process. When we designed the system, we knew that the first-line supervisors, the folks who make up who do the ratings themselves, who evaluate performance, they're also the folks who communicate directly to the workforce on what's going on with the system, provide that the feedback, hopefully the feedback throughout the year on how well they're doing. So we focused our training efforts and our resources and training on that cadre, knowing that it was that they were a linchpin in the process. And again, as I mentioned in my statement, the results are somewhat mixed. There's a couple of key issues I think that I would point to. One is I think that we need to do a better job in general training our supervisors how to be supervisors, not necessarily how to do the NSPS process, but ensure that they're equipped with the competencies when they go into a supervisory job, to manage people, manage resources, deal with things like setting organizational goals and translating those goals into individual performance objectives. And what we've seen from the quality of performance plans, quality of the way job objectives are written, we've got some work to do along those lines. And that can be dealt with via training. It can also, and I think the department as a whole is dealing with this with its leadership development efforts, dealing with preparing folks earlier in their careers to be leaders and to be supervisors. So there's clearly no doubt in my mind that that's an area for improvement. And we've heard directly from those supervisors that they need more help in how to write good job objectives, how to write good plans, how to do good organizational strategic planning.
But on that, I know one of the comments we received was that in many cases the supervisor, the first-line supervisor, is very much part of the workforce. And so we're laying on new requirements. You know,
right.
We've not structured the job so that the supervisor is necessarily supervising full-time. The supervisor is embedded, mission-oriented, but the work tempo is higher than it's ever been. And so you're correct that, indeed, working with the supervisor and structuring those positions, but that's going to be a real challenge.
And it was a shock for many of our supervisors, particularly prior to NSPS, when the amount of time they spent on performance management, performance evaluation, was, for some, almost nil. So, you know, some would argue, and I would argue, that a fundamental part of being a supervisor is doing those kinds of things. So if you're not equipped to do it, if you're not trained to do it, it's going to take longer and it's going to be harder. That's not to say that we can't streamline some processes and make the system better, but certainly, the system assumes that that is a fundamental function of a supervisor.
But not necessarily in a management sense, yes. But in practice, not necessarily. Pay pools. Each of you, give me your one or two or 10 sentences describing the pay pool evaluation process.
I'm not going to. Let me comment on. You're asking about employee acceptance, trust, and pay pools, and how do those work? And I agree, it's very complicated. DOD has a challenge. It's a massive workforce. But those questions of yours are related to two of the internal safeguards that we feel must be in place to have that effective performance management system. I mentioned assuring transparency in the performance management process. That's part of gaining the employee's trust. If it's not transparent how the process works, who's deciding my rating? Who's influencing my rating? Who's determining the number of shares I get, even though I got a 4? How does that work? If the employees don't understand, it's going to be difficult for them to accept and trust. So I think DOD has definitely made steps in trying to make the process transparent. May need to make it more transparent. I referred to part of the transparency is the publication of the final rating results, which when we did our first study, we found some commands were doing that, some commands weren't. The DOD has taken action, and now it's required. The other safeguard that I believe gets to the heart of what you're discussing about the pay pools is training. We feel that training and retraining and retraining and retraining is critical for the employees, supervisors, everyone up through the chain. One course isn't going to do it. One exposure, two exposures. Refresher training is needed at every appraisal cycle. And an understanding of not just the appraisal cycle, but what is this performance management system? What is it all about? Where does it all fit together? That's critical. But that's my two cents. I'll let Dr. Crum.
Thank you. Again, I have to caution that my remarks talk about pay performance in general, not about NSPS, because we have not looked at that issue. But again, the greater transparency, the better. If, in fact, you have a system where employees feel that things are done to them rather than with them, then you have a system that sets up this distrust. That, in fact, supervisors need to play more of a role than just providing appraisals, just providing input into the pay determination through the pay pools. They need, in fact, be doing things that are empowering employees, that are, in fact, sending them the message that they are valuable parts of the mission and that they are part of the process. This involves both empowering them, coaching them, mentoring them, providing them with the opportunities so that the employees can go back and understand what's going on. Again, if it's a system that, in fact, is just here's now your appraisal, and we put it into this formula, and it cranks out this sort of raise for you, then, in fact, it's not going to be, even if we show them how to do it, purely transparent, because they will not have had the same opportunity to engage with their supervisor about what they should be doing, how they should be doing it, how they can improve, what sort of opportunities are there for them. In other words, I think that we have to talk about a different way of managing for the system to work properly, and that this is part of the true transparency, not just providing a system overlay.
Okay. Thank you.
On pay pools, we actually designed the pay pool process as one of the checks and balances in the system. Early on in the design, we heard from employees their skepticism over the ability of their supervisors to do good performance evaluation. And what we've learned from our previous experience with other alternative personnel systems and demonstration projects was the pay pool process itself could form that check, that safeguard in the system. Pay pool, the panels themselves are made up of primarily senior managers in an organization. So what their job is not necessarily and not fundamentally to evaluate performance of the individuals. It's to make sure that the supervisors and those higher level reviews are applying the criteria in a consistent manner to ensure that there's consistency across an organization. That's the purpose of the pay pool. But one of the things that we have found is that in terms of the practices of the pay pool, how they apply business rules, funding practices, those kinds of things, we are seeing variation across the department, across the roughly 1,600 pay pools on how they do things. We provided flexibility for organizations to set up pay pools in a variety of ways to establish various business rules, and we're seeing a lot of variation based on that flexibility, and I think that's one of the areas of focus for the department is to look at whether those variations can be explained and whether they're appropriate. So that's certainly an area ripe for exploration.
Okay. Pay bands, just any thoughts?
Your question was, what recommendations might we have with respect
to changing the existing pay band structure?
Well, the pay banding structure generally, and again, a pay band, the concept of pay bands is not new. We've been working with pay bands for years. One of the issues we constantly hear from organizations under NSPS is our pay band 2, which is where we have the greatest concentration of the workforce under NSPS is in the pay band 2, which currently encompasses the former GS-9 all the way up to the GS-13. So it's an extremely broad band, and it now encompasses work that used to be broken up based on, you know, the complexity of the work. And progression through that band becomes very complex for organizations to manage. Some jobs that used to be GS-9 to GS-11s now have this huge expanse of headroom in pay potential, and organizations are concerned about the costs associated with everybody marching to the top of the band. We've done a lot of work in terms of training our organizations on how to manage compensation, but we're not quite there yet. I don't have a specific recommendation, but if I were to focus my efforts, it would probably be on that pay band.
Okay, thank you. Before I yield to Mr. Tobias, I think the pay pool will be an issue we'll come back to. I do want to acknowledge that the May 15, 2009 report is a vigorous report, and if its purpose was, as stated, to red team NSPS implementation, it did that, and so I need to acknowledge that you have presented us with a vigorous report on those issues that are working and those issues that are not working, and so I just want to acknowledge that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Tobias.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I agree with that. It is really a good piece of work that you sponsored, you put together, and you published. I assume from your testimony that you believe NSPS motivates people who are covered by NSPS to increase their performance. And what I mean by that is, if I'm a level 4 performer and I produce 1.0, whatever 1.0 is, that without NSPS, I might produce 0.8 instead of 1.0. So that without NSPS, I produce 0.8, but with NSPS, I produce 1.0. So my question is, what data is available to support the assumption that this system, as it's currently designed and implemented in DOD, motivates employees to actually increase their performance?
I'm assuming you're directing that question to me.
I am.
Mr. Tobias.
I'm sorry. Mr. Bunn.
Frankly, I don't have a database that shows net increase in performance of either organizations or individuals. We're certainly able to track performance over time of individuals. And in fact, I mentioned in the testimony that most of the folks who got a 1 or a 2 in 2008 actually improved their performance, or at least got a higher performance rating. I'm assuming that's a result of improved performance. Whether NSPS or the pay-for-performance system or the evaluation system itself motivated that increased performance, we don't have data that says exactly what motivated that. What NSPS is designed to do, and Dr. Crum mentioned the research, shows that pay-for-performance by itself is not necessarily the driver for changes in performance behavior. But what NSPS was designed to do is promote a performance culture so that organizations are clear to the workforce what the goals of the organization are.
That could be accomplished. The goals of the organization could be made clear by having an effective performance management system without pay pools. I mean, you could have some other system for allocating awards, quality step increases, the traditional things that we are aware of, without pay pools, however, with a performance management system where people's individual goals are linked to organizational mission goals. Wouldn't that be right?
I think it is possible to do that. What the underlying assumption with the design of NSPS and what informed us from experience with past systems is that without a link between the pay outcomes and the performance evaluation system, managers, supervisors, employees don't spend a lot of time focused on that. Whether pay itself, and I agree, and I've read the research, that the pay outcome itself is not the number one motivator for individuals, putting pay on the table does clarify in an organization, does drive behaviors in organizations that otherwise you wouldn't see. Again, the degree to which pay is affected by the performance evaluation system, I think it's a debate that we need to have. But as I mentioned in my testimony, the fundamental underlying design principle of pay for performance is actually in the law. So we set out to design a system that complied with that requirement that there be a pay for performance evaluation system. So I think, if we talk and debate about the performance management system and whether that could drive the behaviors, we need to settle the issue on the pay-for-performance aspect. Whether the pay itself is the number one motivator, the data doesn't support that.
There are some critics who have characterized the NSPS system as a method for increasing pay as opposed to a method for increasing performance. And what they cite is the fact that the average pay increase for NSPS was 6.41%, and the average pay increase for the GS employees was 3.9%. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would respond by saying that's not an apples-to-apples comparison. When you look at the pay system under, say, the GS and how pay has progressed in that system compared to NSPS, which is a pay banding system, We actually take the same dollars and distribute them differently under NSPS. So, for example, and probably the biggest difference is that under NSPS, we no longer have within-grade increases. We no longer have a lot of the career ladder promotions that you have under the general schedule. So when you look at the annual average increase on the GS compared to the NSPS, it's not apples to apples. And from our own internal looks at this, we're not seeing salaries skyrocketing. We are, however, seeing some indications that at least in some organizations, labor costs are rising.
There's a great deal of resistance among supervisors to the NSPS system. A great deal of resistance, primarily based on the fact that it, as they say, it takes too much time. And Dr. Crum talked about the fact that no pay-for-performance system can survive unless it's not only about feedback, it's about employee development, it's about employee support, it's about supervisors taking time to know who they manage, to learn who they manage and know who they manage. I guess I'm following along the same line as the chairman here. There's been a lot of criticism of the way the federal government in general has selected first and second and third level managers based on their ability to do as opposed to their ability to lead. And they don't want to lead. They want to do because that's what they're rewarded for. They're not rewarded for leading. They're rewarded for doing. And so now, given that culture, given that situation, you are now asking them to do something that is directly contrary to the way they see themselves, the way they define themselves, the way they're evaluated. So it strikes me that the complaint about time is an indicia of the failure to really come to terms with the incredible amount of change that would be required to make NSPS successful in DOD. Am I off base with that?
No, I don't think so. I would agree that implementing NSPS, and again, let me caveat that by saying, from our perspective, and I think this is in the report, it's still early in our implementation. We're seeing some things that are the system kind of shaken out and seeing some of the bugs that are in it. But with respect to your point, Mr. Tobias, that is part of the cultural change that has to take place if a system like NSPS or any system that requires robust and rigorous performance evaluation because pay is tied to it, we have to take some actions to continue that shift. And as I mentioned before, the department is taking some actions. I think it's uncovered that issue in a big way because we are seeing supervisors who were promoted to supervisory jobs because of their technical acumen as opposed to their ability to lead
people.
Well,
I'm startled to say that you just discovered that. I mean, this
well, I won't say that I'm surprised, but we did in our implementation approach, we focused resources on that particular issue in terms of our training. But again, I believe it's going to be, over time, a gradual cultural shift.
Why do you assume that these folks will change? These are people who have been around for a while, 20 years. 25 years. Why will they change?
I think some will change because of the necessity to change in order to be successful in their job. They'll be motivated to change the way they approach work and approach their jobs. Some of them, we know, have self-selected out of supervisory roles. And frankly, the pay banding system allows them to take a different career track without necessarily taking a compensation hit. And some probably won't change, and it'll take a while. They'll eventually depart in some form or fashion, and if we're doing our job right in the department and across the federal government, we'll replace them with folks who are true leaders.
Let me just say that I'm concerned that the number of people in your surveys who evidence this complaint are sufficiently significant that if I were managed by one of these folks, I would not be motivated by NSPS. I would be negatively motivated by NSPS. So if you assume, which I don't, that over time there will be enough people who actually do change, in the interim, there will be long-lasting damage in the terms of people who are not motivated by this system, as opposed to even assuming that pay does motivate them. You mentioned in your testimony that only 26% of the NSPS workforce agreed in 08 that the pay pool panel helps ensure that the rating and payout process is equitable in their organization, and 36% disagreed. 26% seems to me to be a pretty low percentage of support for this system. And you can say, well, you know, we only have 100,000 people, and they've only done it twice, and we notice the trajectory is increased in the other alternate pay systems. But certainly, when I look at the system, when I look at there are 1,600 pay pools, and I look at the fact that you say that they're not doing evaluations, but on the other hand, they're ensuring consistency and directing that supervisors change evaluations, it sounds to me like they're evaluating. When supervisors come back and say to those they lead, well, the pay pool made me do it. When some people get two shares, some people get one share for the same system, it sounds to me like a system that no matter how well it was described, how much it was communicated, there is so much that I can't know. And when I don't know, I always assume the worst when it has an adverse impact on me. I always do. I mean, I never assume that you're doing me well when you tell me that my evaluation is lower, right? I clearly know you don't understand, right? So how can this... Where am I going wrong with this?
I hate to steal my colleagues' time.
I got a couple of questions for them. Don't worry. I
think that's reflective of one of the issues that we have certainly noticed within NSPS organizations, which is kind of a fundamental lack of understanding about how the pay pool panel works. So when we roll it out and we have pay pool panels meeting, it looks like they're meeting in secrecy behind closed doors, in smoke-filled rooms. So I think a lot of people are like you, Mr. Tobias. They assume the worst, that they're not actually engaged in
fair
discussion.
Play. They're not engaged right. In fair play.
And one of the things we did early on was attempt to demystify and demythify the pay pool panel process for not only for employees but also for first-line supervisors, rating officials who don't necessarily participate directly in the panel process. We created a training regimen for folks who could go through that training and actually act out and do role-playing and participate in a panel-like process. Ultimately, you have to make a judgment about how much transparency is appropriate, because part of the purpose of the pay pool panel is to make senior level managerial decisions about evaluation, about performance evaluations. So there's a point where you do have to close the door and make those decisions known. I think the more successful organizations under NSPS have been the ones that have communicated everything they possibly can about how the pay pool panel works without necessarily compromising the privacy of individuals and specific performance ratings. And again, we see variation in how organizations do that, and that's an area for us to go explore and see if we need to tighten up and standardize some of the processes so that we have better and more consistent transparency. But on the issue of the supervisors who are directed to have a change in their rating, and that does happen, probably doesn't happen as often as most people think. But what our rules say and this is the design of the system, what our rules say is that if a PayPal panel, a PayPal manager looks at a rating and it, the rating doesn't match the write-up, for example, before that PayPal manager can direct the change to the rating, that rating official has an opportunity to come into the PayPal panel and provide additional justification information about why they recommended the rating they did. And that communication has got to happen, too. And that's how you sort of capture the rating official in the process so they fully understand. They don't necessarily have to agree with the final outcome, but ultimately they understand the rationale. And again, I don't know that we have great consistency across the board on that as well. So that, again, an area that we need to look at.
Ms. Farrell, you indicated sort of the standard belief, in, which is true, that organizational change takes time for employees to accept it. The NSPS is a significant organizational change effort at root. It's a huge, significant organizational change effort. What would lead you to conclude that it would ever be accepted? Because time may mean more resistance, not more acceptance. So what leads you to believe that time would lead to acceptance?
Well, our body of work shows that a transformation of this scale does take time, five to 7 years. We have cautioned DOD in the past about moving cautiously to be sure that they have their institutional infrastructure in place. That, you know, I said in the my opening comments, I said in the written comments, how it's done, when it's done, the basis upon which it's done has all makes all the difference in whether or not an organization is going to be successful with performance management. We don't know what the outcome is.
Right. So in short, you don't know what the outcome would
be. But that's the reason we, when DOD was designing the system, and even back, I know, in 2005, we emphasized the need for an evaluation, which DOD has put forth one just last week, the need for an evaluation, and not just once, but continual evaluation to with results-oriented metrics to determine where are they, what's your end goal, to get to the heart of what you're saying. How do I know I've reached my goal?
All right.
And that's what we'll be looking for in DOD's evaluation plan of what are they doing to lay out metrics to assess their progress to get to that goal of an effective performance management system?
I would suggest that it's more than whether or not it's accepted by employees. The alternative pay systems have been often evaluated in terms of whether or not they're accepted by employees. It's very easy, I think, to gain acceptance. You just pay people more. Then they're always happy, happier anyway. So I think that this system has to rise or fall on the basis of whether or not people actually choose to increase their performance. A lot of money has been invested based on that assumption, and yet we still don't have any data. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Tobias. Mr. Baer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Crum, I want to explore a little bit this issue about pay for performance. You've obviously looked at this a great deal. Yet there is a large body of literature in the private sector saying that in non-governmental areas, that in some skills and some tasks, performance, pay for performance affects performance. I mean, have you seen that in the non-governmental literature? And could you comment on whether or not those statements are valid?
They can be valid, but oftentimes in the private sector, much larger segment of pay is put at risk, frequently 20, 30, or 40% of pay. That does get people's attention. That does affect the performance. It also affects sometimes whether just people decide to go into those fields, whether, in fact, they want to put that much pay at risk. So that, in fact, pay for performance can make a difference in performance when enough is put at risk. When small amounts, as is probably the likelihood of any government system, is put at risk, then there are other factors that I believe come into play that outweigh that small amount of pay for the reasons I discussed earlier.
What do you think that threshold is?
I think it varies with the person, but it may be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 or more.
Well, I mean, as a percentage of pay.
I'm saying 20%, 30% of pay.
20 to 30% of pay.
And at risk to lose on any given year, as opposed to just have it incrementally added to pay. It's a very different working environment in that regard.
I understand. It changes the environment fairly dramatically. Then if you looked at federal compensation schedules generally, what would be your thought of the probable impact of a larger swing in the pay at risk? Do you think that there is some threshold that might actually generate performance differentials in government?
It may, but there are other issues involved, too. Remember, the private sector can operate quite differently in terms of keeping pay private. So that we, in the federal sector, everyone knows what everyone else is going to get paid. So that, in fact, if I can tell you that we're going to put, and oftentimes the money put at risk in the private sector is in form of bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
And your bonus is known only by you. Then I can, as a manager, decide whether, in fact, I can influence your behavior in terms of how much I'm offering you and not have to necessarily offer at the same to everyone else. That affects the operation of the organization. When, in fact, everything is public, as it would be in the public sector, I don't think that the people will judge themselves in terms of what others are also being paid. So that will come into play in terms of whether, in fact, it is motivational. If, in fact, I get 20%, which I might, in the abstract, think is motivating for me, but I know the person next to me is getting 30%, all of a sudden that 20% may be not motivational at all.
And then in terms of a performance management system, if, in fact, the taxpayers are looking for a well-performing organization and see a fairly articulated set of goals for that organization, what generally has your research shown is the best way to link that performance to the individual worker and to their supervisors?
Again, in a situation where we are not selling a product, where we're not subject to market forces, it is very difficult in the public sector. Basically, the best can be done is to have a few organizational goals that then cascade down throughout the organization in terms of what contributes to completion of those goals, cascading through the supervisor to the employee, so that the employee understands where they make a difference. Employees want to make a difference. They want to do the best. They need to understand how they are making that difference. I think that's sort of the best answer I could give is in fact, seeing that line of sight to organizational outcomes and instilling a sense of pride through telling people they are a valued part of that organization in completion of that mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than money, in a sense.
Okay. Brad, could you talk a little bit about this training for supervisors? We've heard so much about and seen so much in the literature of the concern of the workers towards whether or not there's confidence in the supervisor's ability to accurately report and reward their performance. In this process now, several years along, have there been any supervisors that have been removed for poor supervisory performance?
Not that I'm personally aware of. My office doesn't track those kinds of things. I would venture to guess that among all the organizations and the tens of thousands of people, there have at least been some changes made, whether there was a removal from service or a reassignment to another job. I would venture to guess that there have been those situations.
And what was the working assumption about the GS schedule supervisors? How much time were they spending in employee face-to-face mentoring and evaluating? How much of their time and effort on the supervisor's part was spent doing that?
It varied. I think it varied based on the performance management system they may have been operating under, and it also varied based on their own particular approach to managing people. Generally, a supervisor spends anywhere from, 25% to 35% of their time doing those kinds of functions. You probably had some that were spending.
They spent 25 to 35% of their time under the GS schedule doing employee ratings and evaluations?
No, I was referring to the overall process. If you just isolated the performance planning, evaluation, mentoring, coaching, those kind of things, it's probably less. But again, it depends on, you know, their scope, the span of control. If they have a lot of employees, they may spend a lot of time doing that. Half of the department prior to NSPS was actually operating under pass-fail systems. And those systems didn't require the amount of time and effort on performance evaluation as a multi-level system did. Some of our organizations did come from multi-level systems and still experienced that shock of having to spend more time doing evaluation.
Was there any thought given in the implementation of NSPS to evaluating supervisors to see their ability to go, no-go forward in terms of execution of the system, this very complicated system you were rolling out?
The one piece of evidence we have on that is we did require, we mandated the training, the performance management training, which is a multi-day course of training, and required that before a supervisor could actually rate an employee, they had to have successfully accomplished that training. So that's the one thing that we did to put a marker down that said you have to have gone through this training.
And what was the how did a supervisor successfully complete the training? What was the objective measure at the end that said they were ready to execute?
Frankly, they didn't take a test. There was no final exam or anything along those lines. Obviously, they had to be there and go through the entire training process. At best, I think I can say that our instructors may have flagged for organizations, individuals that weren't getting it, but we didn't set a formal set of criteria that said you have to demonstrate these competencies in order to get this certificate. We didn't do that.
Well,
that was an organizational leadership
I see.
Issue.
So in other words, the supervisors weren't given objective criteria to meet before they went out to actually exercise an objective criteria evaluation system.
All of our training came with formal training objectives, and if someone successfully completed the training and got the certificate, they were assumed to have those competencies, understanding of the NSPS performance management process, understanding of development of job objectives, the evaluation process. What we did after that, we do have a required supervisory job objective in the performance management process, so that supervisors are actually, part of their rating is based on how well they perform those parts of the supervisory function.
And what portion of their overall job scale is associated with this now?
In terms of how much of their rating is
associated,
I don't know
with
that. I can get you that information. I don't know that off the top of my head.
And over the several years of the program, how much has the training for supervisors changed as you have learned and seen the surveys and so on? What's changed about the training during that period of time?
I can give you a better response in writing. I'll have to consult with my staff on what specifically we've done. We have modified our training materials. One of the things we did was we expanded the training for supervisors and employees on the performance management process with more of a focus on how to write what we call SMART objectives. That seemed to be the sticking point and continues to be a sticking point. And that is the sort of the culmination of translating organizational goals into individual, measurable job objectives at the individual level. That is a complex thing to do for a lot of our organizations that don't have clear, objective, measurable goals for the organization. So we focus more of our resources on that. We improve training along those lines. We created a web-based tool called iSuccess that employees and supervisors could use to help them write those objectives. So we've done a lot of things along those lines.
And do you have any third-party evaluators of your supervisors? What outside efforts do you use to evaluate whether or not the supervisors are doing a good job?
The only thing I can point to is our program evaluation effort. Which we do spend a lot of time talking to supervisors.
Ms. Farrell, then, on the transparency question, when the GAO examined some of the rating schemes for the various organizations, some of them were public. Hear you say that?
Yes.
What was your impression about how fairly this was operated on the ones you were able to see initially?
Well, again, we look for the safeguard being in place for the transparency. At the time of the review last year, there were, I believe, three commands that were publishing the final rating results so that the employees would have some idea of what was happening with their command. Since then, as I noted, DOD has required the commands and the pay pools to publish those final rating results, and the current team has been making their visits to installations to see how that is operating. It is my understanding that all the installations we visited to date, the ratings have been publicized. The transparency is key, as we're talking. It's not just publicizing the ratings, as we're seeing. It's being the employee knowing enough about how the pay pool process works and how that affects their pocketbook is what they're wanting to know.
Can anyone comment about whether or not the surveys of the workforce were able to identify whether or not those three transparent commands had a higher or lower satisfaction with NSPS once they saw the rating scheme and the rating results?
I have to go back and look at that. And it's probably unfair to Brad at this time, you know, to think back of last year, those three commands of what we saw, but that is something that has been identified as helping to improve employee satisfaction in terms of transparency.
With the data, I realize you may not know this answer off the top of your head, Brad, but would the data show that? Does it break it down to organizational level?
No, it doesn't. However, we do, we look at survey data. We also talk to organizations. So that's not necessarily something we couldn't find out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bayer. I want to thank all three presenters for their comments. Ms. Farrell, I know that the 2008 Defense Authorization Bill gave the GAO a mandate in terms of looking at transparency and other NSPS implementation issues. Is that a permanent mandate?
No. It's for us to report for 2008, 2009, and 2010.
Okay.
Just those 3 years.
Does that mandate include transparency in terms of allegations about disparity based on ethnic origin or race or anything like that?
The safeguards are specified in the 2008 National Defense Authorization Act. They're broad, like merit principles, employee involvement. It does give us latitude. It includes and other identified internal safeguards. We have not gotten into issues of the extent, if any, discrimination. We look at it from a fair and merit-based view.
We have received a few inquiries, and we may forward them to you, not for casework, but rather for evaluation. Just a last comment, supervisors. You know, it's been a good discussion, and interestingly, when we have the research sessions and then this public session, the meetings have a personality to them. They come, and I'm often surprised it's not where we expected to go. Some of the questions on pay pool transparency came from senior government leaders on the management side. But you know, what we ask our supervisors, both in terms of implementing a commercially based pay-for-performance system, looking at the model of the private sector, our military personnel have a term, op tempo. We all know what that means. But they also talk about work tempo, meaning that in military organizations, in government organizations generally, one of the stress points are how can I minimize labor costs. We have big deficits. We have a war going on. And so, obviously, budget pressures are a reality. And so This produces what the rank and file refer to as work tempo, meaning that I may be a supervisor, but at the core I have to lead my people, and that means I'm going to roll up my sleeves and be out there on the floor with them, and I'm going to be participating. And so a comparable example, which had to be solved, were drill instructors in the active duty training. And so their normal day would be 6 o'clock in the morning until 6 or 6:30 at night when they were relieved. But once they were relieved from their direct supervision of essentially getting the recruits ready for to go into active duty, they had a whole host of other obligations they had to execute, from personnel reports, audit statements, things like that. And you know what we noticed was that the last thing of the day was always they had to get their uniform ship-shape for the next day of duty, which under the specifications, you know, requires a fair amount of time. So the work tempo, I think, you know, we talk about supervisors, we talk about what we expect their obligations to be, but we need also to factor in that often under budget pressures, we ask the supervisors to contribute and help resolve the work tempo issues. So the interesting point here is how much we're demanding of the supervisors in terms of executing the system and how many burdens they are already carrying in their active day-to-day work. So unless my colleagues have a final comment of Mr. Tobias.
I do have one more question to Mr. Bond. This report says that, let me just say that this report says that over 90% of the sampled employee performance objectives were strongly aligned with organizational goals and objectives and very realistic. So an objective analysis, somebody coming in and looking and saying, our goals, our individual employee goals aligned with organizational goals 90% of the time, which I consider to be extraordinary. I mean, extraordinary. And so from a performance management standpoint, that's a good thing because it goes to what Dr. Crum is saying. I can take pride when I have achieved my goals because I know what they are. I like that. Yet, in answering the question, NSPS has improved ensuring individual performance supports organizational mission effectiveness. The response rate is only about large increases in unfavorable responses since November 2006 have made favorable and unfavorable response rates nearly equal for all spirals in 2008. The proportions of the populations who agree, 32%, disagree, 30%, and are indifferent, about 38%, are similar. Now, how would you explain that? I mean, I explained it by saying that the pay pools have poisoned the water. How would you explain it?
I wouldn't put it that way, but I think that given the fact that organizations are learning the system and struggling to learn the system and spending a lot of time on those kinds of processes and mechanics to make sure that they're following the rules and that's taking up a lot of the time, Mr. DeLeon mentioned, for supervisors, also senior leaders, that the goodness associated with the alignment of job objectives and the communication between supervisors and employees is probably getting overshadowed by the negativity around the processes and the questions and skepticism about the fairness of the process itself. So that would be my attempt to explain it.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor? So I'd just like to thank the panel members for their contribution. And thank you. Thank you for the testimony
Chairman, thank
today.
You.
Thank you.
And we'll start the next panel. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Anybody else want to have a job?
You're good at it.
Oh, the water guy.
We'll give folks just a few more minutes to come back in and settle down. Okay, if everyone will take their seats, I would just like to welcome our second panel that will be presenting here today. They have important statements to make. John Gage, the President of the American Federation of Government Employees. Richard Brown of the National Federation of Federal Employees. Carol Perkinson of the Federal Managers Association. Gentlemen, we welcome the three of you. Your comments today are extremely important to this task group and would like to allow you to proceed. I understand you have an order that you would like to proceed, so I'll just yield to the panel and go.
Yeah, I'm still stunned by the last panel. Would you mind if my brother Rich Brown would start off? Thanks.
Richard Brown.
Okay. Is that... vodka in that picture?
Do it a little bit.
Is there vodka in that picture, man? Because I was actually hoping for a drink. No, I'm just teasing. Good afternoon. On behalf of the National Federation of Federal Employees, and I'll just take time to read this statement and certainly be willing to answer any questions.
Great, thank you.
At the conclusion, when my brother is done. On behalf of the National Federation of Federal Employees and the 100,000 federal employees we represent, including 45,000 at DOD, I want to thank you, the task board group, for the opportunity to testify. You have asked us to offer a view on whether the underlying design principles and methods for implementing NSPS reflect the personnel systems objectives, whether the objectives have been met, whether NSPS is fair and transparent and effective. While NSPS professes to serve the design principles, such as flexibility, adherence to merit principles, fairness, credibility, transparency, and to link performance to the DOD strategic plan, I can definitely say that those aspirations have not been met by the NSPS we see today. Before I get into the details, I want to share with you some personal experience and to discuss NSPS in a broader context. Before coming to Washington to head our union, I was employed as a machinist working on prototype weapon systems at the Watergate Arsenal in upstate New York. I know what it's like to work for a major defense installation. I was on the shop floor manufacturing military ordnance for the Department of the Army for 14 years. I know the realities of work. I know the realities and work culture at DOD. I know how managers and employees interact out in the field. I know this because I was there and I lived it. I can tell you with great certainty this highly controversial personnel system cannot possibly be a success. Rather, I believe that it will be, if fully implemented, NSPS could destroy the nation's capability to maintain our military readiness, a possibility that would work firmly against the strategic interests of our union in America. The impact of NSPS goes well beyond the unequivocally negative effect it will have on DOD workers. We are currently engaged in two major military conflicts abroad, which are putting great demands on our civilian defense workforce. Concurrently, the department is facing a personnel crisis created by the surge in retirement being experienced throughout civil service. These two factors are already putting significant strain on our defense agencies to maintain our military readiness. By moving the entire DOD workforce under NSPS, an unproven system, which the department is currently incapable of implementing properly, we add a third component that will drag down morale, eliminate the effectiveness that do exist, and ultimately will undercut the department's ability to perform. Our women and men in uniform are counting on us to provide them with the tools they need to perform their duty and protect our nation. NSPS puts that capability to deliver in jeopardy. This panel should not underestimate the extreme distrust that defense workers have for NSPS. The personnel system is a legacy of former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who grabbed authority to construct a new personnel system at DOD in the wake of 9/11. Once given the authority, he pushed forward a plan that aimed to eliminate defense workers' right to bargain collectively and appeal adverse actions. It also aimed to shift workers out of a more structured general schedule into a highly subjective pay banding system, which could be used to stifle defense workers' pay. In devising the system, DOD completely ignored the input from the rank-and-file worker and their unions. Even after some 58,000 comments from the concerned DOD employees and well over a month of meet and confer with unions, the department's personnel plan remained virtually unchanged from their original proposal. Adopting this approach to labor management relations made it abundantly clear that NSPS would be used to eliminate DOD employees' voice in the workplace and silence defense unions. Although NSPS has been scaled back by Congress since then, the changes have had done nothing to shake the justifiability of high level of distrust the defense employees have for NSPS. For better than half a decade, department workers have understood that NSPS was a threat, that the personnel plan could not be trusted. This well-ingrained negative opinion of NSPS is not likely to be swayed by minor policy repackaging or a new approach to detailing to the unions, dealing with the unions. Excuse me. Defense workers have already made up their minds on NSPS. They want it gone once and for all. I agree with this assessment. I believe NSPS is unsalvageable, and at best possible course of action is full repeal. Operating under the status quo with these different pay systems is not a viable long-term structure for DOD. Given the major problems with NSPS, we consider moving the entire defense workforce under NSPS to an unacceptable solution. That leaves converting NSPS workers back to GS system as the final and most attractive option for DOD moving forward. Just because we favor GS system to NSPS does not mean that we are only interested in maintaining status quo. Far from it. We're all aware that the GS system has significant flaws, and we are willing to work with the administration and Congress to address these shortcomings. In fact, we are currently engaged in discussions with OPM Director John Berry and relevant congressional committees on how to make such needed improvements to the current system. We are ready to roll up our sleeves and get to work solving the problems the federal government faces. By working together, I believe we will see significant improvements to the GS system in the coming years. I believe that further implementation of the NSPS could actually be a major obstacle to needed civil service reform. An attempt to force NSPS on rank-and-file defense workers could sour the relationship between various stakeholders and could undermine the possibility of meaningful, worthwhile negotiations and reform. Although change is called for, we should not make mistake that to mean any change is good. Change for change's sake is a bad idea. We need to make that when a significant overhaul to a system is made, it is the right change, and NSPS is not the right change. Being the largest department in the federal government, DOD is not ready to change a system like NSPS. DOD does not have the infrastructure in place to make a seamless transition to a sophisticated appraisal system that might facilitate a fair and transparent merit pay plan. DOD is several years away from being capable of implementing a more merit-based system properly. It is important to note that making the DOD proving ground for major personnel reform has never a strategic decision made by Congress or the administration. It was not recommended by employee groups or government think tanks. DOD became a federal personnel system crash test dummy purely out of political happenstance. NSPS was originally part of a greater government-wide reform effort that included similar organizations like MaxHR at DHS, Working for America Act, and Working for America Act, which was made of similar personnel system, personnel reforms government-wide. While those other plans have long been abandoned, NSPS remains. It is time to close the book on NSPS as well. I now want to address some specific issues of NSPS. If the goal is to link performance with pay, NSPS has failed. A pay-for-performance system should compensate employees based on how they are rated primarily from their immediate supervisors. However, under NSPS, the ratings of supervisors can and are often overturned. The final decision on rating and payouts is made by a pay pool panel, which includes managers that may know very little of the employee's performance. An employee's pay becomes more a function of how they influence a manager, how much influence a manager has in the pay pool, and not the employee's actual performance. Any pay system that rewards one employee's performance at the expense of another's because of funding limits will not succeed. Under NSPS, if a manager wants to reward an employee in the maximum number of shares and therefore the highest possible bonus, the limited pay pool compels a manager to rate another employee lower in order to do so. This is fundamentally unfair. This is robbing Peter to pay Paul, and allowing it will breed discontent throughout the department. If the goal is to link performance with pay, there must be an objective, measurable means of evaluating employees. While creating NSPS waives Chapter 43 of Title V, NSPS incorporates certain themes found in the chapter, such as periodic appraisals and communication of performance standards and expectations. Plainly absent from NSPS criteria, yet central to Chapter 43, is the requirement that performance standards allow accurate evaluation of job performance based on job-related criteria. Regulations without objective measurable criteria authorize individual managers to use unfettered discretion to subjectively rate the employee's performance. For example, professionalism and creativity, while valued concepts, are mandated yet undefined by NSPS, and inevitably vary from occupation to occupation, geographical location to geographical location, and supervisor to supervisor. Another example of a highly subjective job-related criteria is respect for others, which can easily be used to hurt an employee's rating and payout, even if they are performing well. These undefined standards do nothing to advance the design principles of NSPS and cause great frustration amongst defense workers. I want to expand on the point that NSPS cannot coexist with the GS system. The two systems inherently conflict, and there's little that DOD can say which will change this reality. NSPS allows managers to reassign employees under positions with higher earning potential without the use of competitive process. The GS system, however, preserves competition by adhering to the merit principles and ensures fairness, credibility, and transparency. Case in point, Letterkenny Army Depot local management officials have reassigned bargaining unit employees into NSPS positions with higher earning potential, without open and fair competition, simply because it allows them to do so. This reassignment violates Title V and is a clear violation of congressional intent. Congress compelled DOD to retain merit principles in implementing the new system. NSPS rules authorize management to take the action, but but doing so was demoralizing to other qualified employees who lost the opportunity to advance their careers. When DOD hand selects employees for positions without open and fair competition, freezing out other qualified employees and applicants, even veterans, from being considered for vacant positions, the system fails. This is an issue. This issue is a sad portrait of what we can expect to see under NSPS. NSPS also does not prevent DOD from reassigning union leaders and other bargaining unit employees as a means in which the department will be able to legally bust a union under NSPS rules. This is shameful and unacceptable. Before I finish, I'd be remiss to not touch on the enormous cost of NSPS, which has renewed relevance with a slumping economy. Remember, the true cost of NSPS was never disclosed publicly. Since 2003, DOD has gone to great lengths to conceal the true cost of NSPS. A GAO study from late 2005 calculated that the poor accounting would prevent the department from ever giving a true account of the personnel systems price tag. One can only estimate how much American people have been forced to spend on an ill-conceived reform. However, I believe any realistic estimate would run well into the billions of dollars, and full implementation of NSPS will run billions more. We need to stop throwing good money after bad at this failed program, especially with the soaring deficit. Clearly, NSPS will not work in its current form, so the question becomes whether to scrap NSPS altogether or to find a way to adjust it and make it work. For all the aforementioned reasons, I believe we should cut our losses with NSPS debacle once and for all and move forward. And I'd just like to add one thing that's not in this written testimony. There's a lot of my DOD brothers and sisters in this audience. Could you raise your hands, brothers and sisters? And I was one and a proud one, too. I can tell you one thing. They're talking about performance. They're talking about lack of performance. Talking about pay. What makes you work for the government? I can tell you, as a former defense worker and speaking and taking the liberty to speak on their behalf, it wasn't a performance appraisal. And it wasn't money. It was because the ordinance we were working on protect people's lives across the pond. And that's why we did a good job. And the performance appraisal wouldn't make us do it any better. They perform for America every day. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, very much.
Thank you, Rick.
President Gage.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Tobias, and, Mr. Baer, and Chairman DeLeon, I really want to thank you for taking this job on. It's probably one of those thankless ones. But I really feel, just from the way you've conducted yourself in this thing, that you care about good government and that you're going to give an objective look to this thing. I want to start with the charge given to you, because especially number one, which talks about are the design principles of NSPS, are they reflected in what's going on now? And I think we can take this one off the board, because I mean, clearly, this program was ideologically driven. It was combined with a theory that government was bad. It was coupled with a huge contracting out of inherently government positions. And so if the principles of suppressing wages, lowering retirement income, eliminating due process, collective bargaining, undercutting morale, eliminating merit promotions, I think we can take that off, because these design principles are fully incorporated, and you can cross that one off your list. I want to say that we have an extensive written statement that, and I know you will take the time to look at the so many arguments and criticisms of this program, and I just want to hit on a couple of them that I've picked up from talking with DOD supervisors and DOD employees. And I want to start with this transparency issue. And I heard Mr. Bunn say that, well, transparency was kind of relative, and you can't tell employees everything. And they did that. That's certainly the case. But look at the appraisal process from an employee's point of view and a supervisor. You know, the employee gets these performance standards, and I appreciate what Mr. Tobias said about it. I'm going to come back to those performance standards and whether they are mission-driven, because so many of them are traits, cooperation, leadership, that kind of hard to quantify. But the supervisor gives these to employees, and the employee works hard during that year. Then he comes into the boss at the end of the appraisal system, at the end of the appraisal period. How'd I do, boss? And the supervisor really can't say anything to him. As a matter of fact, the Army has put out this. And can you imagine talking about a statement like this for true, honest, open, transparent communications with an employee. Here's the supervisor's proper answer when an employee asks, how am I doing? How are you rating me? My recommendation is just that, a recommendation that I will not share with you. The higher-level reviewer and the PayPal panel will be looking at my recommendations in terms of the larger organization. Now, if I'm an employee, you know, my relationship with that supervisor right about there is hurt. Now, what happens then is the employee doesn't get his rating. This is the end of the rating period. He gets a new set of performance standards that he works under until January. During that time, whatever happens with the PayPal panel. Now, the mystery of the PayPal panels, it's not really a mystery. This is a forced distribution that goes on behind closed doors. This is a bell curve. And clearly, anybody looking at this, even with the guidance put out by the various agencies, you don't have to read between the line when they tell supervisors your guideline is try to keep everybody at a 3. So when Mr. Tobias says, what's to stop supervisors from giving everybody ones or twos or to raise up the to everybody a 5, these supervisors are giving the 3s because it's the least avenue of resistance, and I think the statistics clearly point that out. So the employee, after a time or two through this, is going to know it doesn't matter about my work. You know, I'm going to be subject to my supervisor going in there, seeing what he can do, and I'm put into a curve. And it really kills good government. For the good supervisor who really raised up motivation, his people work like anything, they really do a good job. That PayPal is so far removed from the actual work of the employee and the supervisor that this guy's just subject to the bell curve. This is a motivation, a killer on motivation. And I want to say another thing about transparency, because these two things really have me a little frosted, and that is of promotions. Promotions make the world go round in the federal sector. Every study has shown that that is what the good employee, and that's who I'm talking to for here, the good employee. We can handle, you know, the bottom feeder. I mean, this system should not be about taking care of the bottom feeder. We can do this in a number of ways. But what this system does to the good employee, the one who came to the government, wants to work hard, wants to be in true competition for a promotion, that is the thing that motivates our people. And here's how promotions are done under NSPS. First of all, there aren't any promotions. There is no competition. And they're rigs. You can read them. We'll show them to you. It's in our statement. This is all about a supervisor or a manager walks up, taps somebody on the head, say, I'm going to give you some extra duties and pay up to 5%. It's not posted. It's not advertised. No one is in competition. And it is wrong. It is a violation, I believe, of merit promotion principles, and it's anathema to everything that is good about the civil service. Now, there's no transparency at all here. Now, how an employee, and one good thing about the system now, employees really can move. They can determine their own career paths. They can decide, I want to be this type of guy, and they can work their qualifications and apply and get a pretty fair estimation and a pretty good shake on merit promotion. All that is gone with this system. It's like the manager determines where you're going to go. Here's some extra duties. Here's some extra money. Now, plus the extra money is 5%. The minimum on a promotion is 6, and in many cases higher. This is a suppression of wages. Control points, another deception. They don't tell you this. You know, you go into a pay band and let's just say it's between $50,000 and $100,000. You say, hey, I could be making $100,000. Wrong. When they put you in there, they said they hire contractors. Used to be that we had the Bureau of Labor Statistics who would determine what a job was worth. All that methodology, all that sunshine is out. Now there are contractors who will give them a determination of what a job is worth. We have asked, everybody has asked for any methodology, and all we get is proprietary interest, and they won't give it. But what it does is it sets up a control point. So it doesn't matter how much I work. If I bump up against what these contractors and this control point determine is the basic locality pay for this job, that's it. It's like being at the top of a grade after 30 years in the current GS system. But this happens throughout. So I think there is deception, lack of transparency on those three issues for sure: the basic appraisal process, promotions, control points. Now, a couple other things. This SRA report was very interesting. I mean, the conclusions I thought were quite Let's say they gave NSPS every benefit of every doubt. But if you look at really the raw data in those reports, I think they were very telling. For instance, the chart on page 2-8, unbelievable. It showed that it talked about this. It gives this statistic of what you put into NSPS. In other words, your wiggies, a part of your pay raise, promotions. And it shows that people who made under $60,000 made less under NSPS as a group than they would have under the GS. And then look at those making over $100,000, a complete windfall. Now, Mr. Baer, your group prophesied this. You said you got to build a firewall here, or the rich are going to get richer and the poor get poorer. Well, firewalls are not the answer, but that is what has happened and will continue to happen in NSPS. Higher grades, those closer to Washington, Pentagon types, they are the important people, and they will get the biggest slice of the apple. You know, and it's also so interesting, we were talking about these shares and how the every pay pool can do anything it wants to do. How disingenuous is it, when DOD can say, well, this job, this group, this division here, we don't think that's low grade, we don't think that's really into the mission, and they do, by definition, give that pay pool less money. People can work their heads off in that job, meet all their performance standards, and they're going to get less than the GS. And guess what? Who do you think encumbers these positions who are making less than $60,000? And I'm telling you, it's minorities, it's women, and this is a discrimination class action waiting to happen. Now, when you look at some of the results of that SRA thing, and I mean the raw data, I don't believe that we should push this thing in terms of employee surveys. I mean, clearly, many of these NSPS groups are unrepresented. They have no unions there right now. They're very concerned. This system is put in on top of them, and I don't know how accurate these surveys will reflect their true feelings about NSPS. But still, the majority told SRA, number one, the system is not improve the link between pay and performance. Two, NSPS has not improved communications between supervisors and employees regarding performance expectations or feedback. Three, reassignment caps and control points undermine the performance pay system, negatively affecting retention. Four, focus groups express doubt over whether performance ratings matched actual performance. And employees generally see NSPS as worse than the GS system for hiring, placement, and promotion. And the report says that a majority of employees do not believe that pay pool panels help ensure fair ratings and payouts. And the study also says how worried they are about the future retirement of cash bonuses rather than pay increases. And there's another one. You know, bonuses are 5% higher than the cap that was put on for the general payouts. In other words, people are using bonuses more than salaries, and salaries are down 2%. That's just on this latest payout. And we're going to continue to see that. And that's you talk about retention issues when your retirement is going to suffer because of the use of the department in with bonuses rather than salary. That is a key for federal employees. Now, Mr. Tobias, you said, why aren't there productivity indicators, or why aren't there things to show that this works? You know, and that's a very interesting question. And it was also interesting that Mr. Bunn said, well, they're not even looking at it. They did look at it back with the old China Lake and all those things when they were having their experiments on a limited basis on this thing. And they found out there weren't any. In all their studies they did, they found out one place, we were engineers, they did one more published report. One more published report in all those trials. And I really think that that is the key question. Why are we doing this thing? It does not motivate employees. It does not move the productivity of the unit of DOD. And I think it's I think the question is very clear, especially when you look at how this system grew up. This is not a new thing. This has been hanging around by ideologues for years, you know. But where we are right now, your options: kill this thing, let it go on, tinker with it. It's easy to say, let's tinker with it. This is not salvageable. You know, sunshine, transparency, kill this thing. You know, so if we're going to continue to have a system that has no transparency, has no third-party review, I think tinkering with it is simply not taking action that is justified now. Letting it go on as it is, I hope that's clearly off the table. But I think putting together a rational transition back to the GS. Now some will say, well, we want to move forward. We want to have a new personnel system. We want to really revamp the civil service. And I'm for it. We have great ideas about it. You can't get there from here. You can't get there from NSPS. It would be better to start an open dialogue with OPM to talk about how we can really utilize career ladders to make performance. We can take a look at the classification system. We've been talking about updating the classification system for years. It's the same people who refuse to move on classification, OPM, DOD, who are now saying, you can't have a classification system. It's really disingenuous and ironic that these people who defended the classification for so long are now saying it's out. But we can make changes. But we can't continue with NSPS. People's rights are affected. It will be permanently damaging to DOD.
President Gage, thank you very much for that statement. Mr. Perkinson.
Chairman DeLeon, Mr. Tobias, Mr. Baer, good afternoon. My name is Darrell Perkinson, and I'm here today in my capacity as the National President of the Federal Managers Association, as well as a current employee under NSPS at the Norfolk Naval Shipyard in Virginia. Additionally, I bring to the table of being one of those persons that is a rated employee under NSPS and a rating official. And I thank you for this opportunity to present our views before the task group. Nearly 60% of FMA's membership is comprised of employees at the Department of Defense, and almost all of those members are covered under NSPS. We have been closely monitoring implementation of the system, gaining significant feedback from our members in the process. If one thing is for sure, it is that no one view of this system exists. We have members who would love nothing more than to go back to the GS system, and others who would like to see improvements made to NSPS. I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to share those various views with you today. Under NSPS, an employee's pay raise, promotion, demotion, or dismissal is far more uninhibited than it is currently established in the general schedule. We support the premise of holding federal employees accountable for performing their jobs effectively and efficiently, but rewarding them accordingly. We also support any changes that guarantee increased flexibilities, accountability, and performance results. However, we are increasingly realizing that NSPS is not delivering on those promises. Overall, FMA managers and supervisors believe a switch to pay for performance is necessary not only to compete with the private sector for talent, but also to encourage and reward high performance. The time for rewarding employees simply for longevity has passed. Many of the hardworking federal managers under NSPS want to be rewarded for the job they do. However, this system has its flaws. The implementation of NSPS has caused a fundamental shift in the culture at DOD, a shift for which many of our members were not adequately prepared. This has marked the biggest change to a federal agency personnel system in over a generation. It is our experience that DOD leadership has been out of touch with what is being carried out on the ground. The so-called bell curve distribution of raises is of grave concern. Managers and supervisors have reported extreme pressure from higher-ups to maintain a specified distribution of funds or performance ratings within each pay pool, despite claims from DOD leaders that this should not be occurring. For any personnel system to be fair and effective, evaluative ratings and performance awards must be based on merit, not quotas or arbitrary caps. As they are aware of the amount of money in the pool, the pay pool panels have a direct stake in the final ratings of those employees. For example, let's say that nearly everyone in the pool received a 4. The panel is acutely aware that those in the pool will receive a lower share value since there are so many 4s. As such, we have heard reports of great pressure from the panels to lower ratings, especially in the cases of poorly written self-assessments, again, despite claims from DOD leadership that this should not or does not occur. The panels are too focused on the impact they have on share value. We are also finding that there is a lack of consistent or concrete business rules that allow for a transparent and fair deployment of pay for performance. The pay pool panels and sub-pay pool panels are out of touch with the objectives and job functions of the employees whom they are rating. I personally experienced this as well. During the last cycle, I rated 7 employees, one of whom the panel took issue with my rating. Despite my best efforts to explain the value this employee brings to the job, the panel ultimately lowered my rating. As such, we believe the rating official's ranking should be revealed to the employee, and any adjustments made post-rating should be explained and justified by the panel making those adjustments. Vast differences in how the pay pool panels are awarded are also troublesome. Due to the nature of the pay pools, an employee rated a 4 in one pay pool could receive a very different raise than a 4 in a different pool at the same facility. There are also widespread inconsistencies among agencies in DOD. This creates animosity toward fellow employees and agency leadership. It is our belief that raises correlating to ratings should be the same throughout the departments, if not DOD-wide. Many employees continue to feel uncomfortable in the assessment of their own work as required under NSPS. Inadequate training in this area has contributed to employees' lack of confidence in the delivery of their own rating, as they are not sure how to properly convey the value of the work they perform each day. For many employees, this is their first experience providing such information. And a self-evaluation that fails to reveal their full worth to the agency may have a significant negative effect on their paychecks. It has been our experience that pay pool panels heavily rely on one's written assessment, despite the fact that assessments are not required. We have heard from several members that evaluations are nothing more than a writing contest. More attention must be paid to properly train employees how to write self-assessments in order to ensure employees get their rating that their efforts merit. Another hindrance to effectively managing within DOD is the prevalence of multiple pay systems, NSPS, GS, and wage grade. It is simply unacceptable that a single agency utilizes several pay systems that are often at odds with each other within individual departments. At my location, I manage employees under all three systems. This is becoming increasingly difficult when raises among equally performing employees differ. It is the view and recommendation of FMA that DOD establish cohesion within the departments in order to foster a greater sense of equality among the workforce. Employees should not be at a disadvantage simply because they are enrolled in a different pay system than their counterparts whom they work alongside. As Congress calls for a transition back to general schedule within 1 year, if the DOD officials cannot approve NSPS improvements, we must keep several things in mind. First and foremost, we must ensure employees' pay is protected. Those employees who excelled under NSPS and were appropriately rewarded by increases in salary beyond the general scale for their grades should not be penalized by losing pay or not being eligible for future pay increases. Given that the average pay raise under NSPS has exceeded the GS raises, many employees now are a GS level above where they were when they entered NSPS. We must ask ourselves what options are there for these employees. One suggestion is to move them into the GS level where their current pay would place them. By applying this suggestion, the result could be higher numbers of general schedule levels than previously established within an organization. A second suggestion I've heard would be place the NSPS employees at the same GS level they were at when they converted and freeze their pay until the general schedule catches up with them. In such a situation, these employees would be above average performance-wise and should not have their pay negatively impacted because they were forced to endure a system they did not ask to be part of. This scenario would undoubtedly have a huge negative impact on employee morale. Any pay system, whether it is NSPS, general schedule, or something entirely different, must adhere to certain basic principles. Additionally, a shift in the culture of any organization cannot come without interactive training, a training process that brings together the managers responsible for implementing the personnel system and those employees they supervise. If implemented properly, NSPS had great potential to retain and recruit a highly talented workforce. Change for change's sake is only going to compound the ongoing personal challenges at DOD. It is imperative that any system that stands by the principles of transportability, objectivity, and transparency is the system we desire. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Perkinson, for your statement. I thank all three presenters for excellent comments, plenty of things for us to think about, and I know we'll have a discussion here that will help us further refine our own thinking. We, as the three of us, have deliberately not convened to talk about any impressions we might have. Instead, we wanted to go through this phase focused on essentially acquiring data, understanding things. A lot here on the table the three of us have just given us. You know, I actually looked at my comments this morning when I spoke before the AFGE back in 2000. And at that point, we had 8 years of partnership councils, not only